May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Jennifer Fisher on behalf of Stanley Bueller, Christopher Bueller, and Joshua Bueller. This case is on appeal from the grant of the trial court in summary judgment that the matter was not outrageous as a matter of law. The appellants would request that matter be reversed when all evidence is viewed in light most favorable to the plaintiff and the totality of the defendant's conduct is viewed. Reasonable minds can differ whether the conduct of Coles here was outrageous. The basic fact pattern of this matter is my client Stanley Bueller, along with his minor sons, Christopher Bueller and Joshua Bueller, had been shopping at Kohl's. They bought approximately $800 worth of merchandise and left the store. They had not put their merchandise in bags, and that was apparently part of the problem here. Kohl's got reports of theft of a man leaving the store with his children without paying for his merchandise and had called the police for that alleged theft. The police had arrived at the appellant's homes with their lights flashing. You know, they got out, they requested that my client get out of the car, put his hands behind his back, frisked him based on this alleged theft. He had been able to tell them that the receipt was in his pocket, and once they found that, they realized that it had been a wrongful call, and they did vacate the scene. The question here is whether the conduct of Coles in calling the police was outrageous. Coles wants to look at this on a timeline as a single point, that they just thought there was a theft, called the police, and that conduct in and of itself cannot be outrageous as a matter of law. The appellants would urge that the court look at this on a broader timeline, that they look at the totality of the defendant's conduct from the report to not doing anything to even alleviate the problems that had been caused by the reported theft. I don't go into it in detail because the first prong of outrageous conduct is really before the court here, but the third prong in the severe emotional distress that it caused to my plaintiffs is Stanley Bueller has top secret clearance with the U.S. government in his job, and his minor children were both in school. His top secret clearance has been affected in that he had to undergo additional security clearances and investigation because of this alleged theft, which had been compounded by the fact that Coles did not take any actions to alleviate the allegations by writing a letter saying that they were untrue or anything of that nature. The children had problems that manifested themselves in schools with authority figures, etc. As I was saying, the court should look at this as the totality of the defendant's conduct. It starts from the lack of investigation when the reported theft was made. The first problem that Coles has is they can't even identify with any specificity who reported the theft to them. In every affidavit, every deposition that was taken in this matter and is part of the record before this court, a different version of the story was given as to how this theft was reported. You know, in one affidavit, it was, you know, a single customer who had seen my clients walk out of the store and load this in this car. The inference being that, you know, he saw my client leaving the store and followed him and watched him put it in the car. You know, another affidavit indicated that there were four different patrons that saw my client roll the cart full of merchandise outside of the store and put it in the car. You know, depositions showed that it said that the assistant manager saw it and walked out and watched my client load it in the car. Another version of the story was just that somebody was in the parking lot and saw the items being loaded in the car and came in and reported it. Coles can't even identify how they allegedly got notice of this theft. You know, the different versions of the story also are with respect to who the theft was reported to. There's some affidavits which say the theft was reported to the assistant manager, and another one it says that it was reported to the loss prevention officer. None of the Kohl's employees here witnessed the theft. There was even disagreement within Kohl's itself as to whether they accurately and properly reported this theft. The loss prevention officer was resigned over this because there was a disagreement with Kohl's whether she took the proper action of calling the police when she had the alleged tip, or whether she should have told the customers to call themselves. There wasn't contact information kept for the reporting person or persons, as the case may be. And that primarily goes also to the fact that they don't seem to know who the reporting person or persons were. They also didn't take any minimal investigation that could have been done easily. There was no looking, there was no review of the video surveillance, no alarms had gone off, no theft deterring devices had gone off. There was no preliminary inquiry of the cashiers even. When my client had gone back later that day to the store to say, you know, this happened, what exactly happened here today, the cashier remembered him. She said, oh yes, you know, I remember that you left here without putting any of your items in bags. Had Kohl's even done a preliminary sweep of the cashiers to ask, you know, did anybody just, you know, sell items and not put them in bags, you know, it would have been discovered at that time that it was not in fact a theft. You know, further, there was no need to act on the information very quickly. They had his information, his license plate information, which would have linked to his car registration. It would have been something that they could have still, found him later, or he had paid by debit card. Once they had his name, they could have done a search of their system and found that he did in fact pay for his merchandise. I submit that this case is analogous to Lee v. Colorado Times, which was a 2009 case decided by this appellate court. There, the court found that there are several factors that should be looked at in deciding whether a claim is, if it's outrageous conduct. There, the defendant had made, had printed false statements, and they had been based on an unreliable source. The court, in deciding that it was outrageous conduct to print those statements, looked at several items. The first was whether the defendants were under pressure to publish the information quickly without taking steps to verify their statements. That was one of the things I addressed here in some of the preliminary investigation that Kohl's could have done. They weren't under pressure to act quickly here. They had the license plate information they had, which linked to the registration. They knew who the alleged suspect was. The second thing that the Colorado Times case looked at was whether the conduct was repugnant because it impugned plaintiff's integrity. Here, it was a matter of accusing a father with his two children with him of committing basically a brazen theft in the middle of a Sunday afternoon, walking out of a store with a cart full, $800 worth of merchandise. The third factor was whether the defendant published a statement without verifying the information which they were given, which could easily have been checked. Those are some of the items that I went through before, talking to the cashier, looking at video surveillance and the like. The fourth factor was it was foreseeable that the information would likely cause plaintiff's distress. Therefore, the defendant's lack of verification of the information could be viewed by a juror as repugnant. Here they called the police, and like I said, of this brazen theft on a Sunday afternoon with his children. It was foreseeable that the police were going to act in a manner as they did, you know, high rate of speed, lights, you know, frisking him, requesting that the appellant not move in front of his minor children in order to verify whether a theft had been committed. And the last factor that the Lee case addresses, whether the conduct of defendant was related to plaintiff. And here, it was specifically related to him. It was his license plate, and it was, you know, requesting that the police, you know, approach his vehicle, his home. I'm going to leave some time for rebuttal unless your honors have any questions that they'd like me to address before.
To your last point, I mean, isn't there a distinction between conduct by the defendant directly related to the plaintiff versus here where the defendant contacted a law enforcement agency and you know, what the law enforcement agency would do with that information is unknowable to the defendant? Yes, that go to the guy's house, frisk him in front of his children, that's not knowable to them.
Well, I do think that they were accusing a man of committing a theft with his two minor children in the middle of a Sunday afternoon, that it was foreseeable, not necessarily that the cops were going to be specifically lights flashing or frisk him, but that they were going to address the appellants here with a level of concern, you know, whether that be frisk him or lights or sirens. Maybe they don't know the specifics, but it was foreseeable that the police were going to treat it as, you know, sort of kind of a brazen crime with, you know, criminals in the middle of the day. So maybe not specifically as to what, how the cops were going to treat it, but that they were going to treat it with a level of suspicion.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Joe Van Lanningham, attorney registration number 41262. And what plaintiff or what appellants would have this court find is that the dissemination of truthful information, which happens to result in a police investigation, ends up being outrageous conduct, that it's utterly intolerable and atrocious in our society. And that just has no support in the law or in the public policy of Colorado. Now, plaintiff talked a little bit about the elements. We think there's actually two issues on appeal. First, that they have not alleged sufficiently outrageous conduct as a matter of law. And second, that even if they have alleged outrageous conduct, they haven't demonstrated that there was any intent or that Coles acted recklessly to cause severe emotional distress in the plaintiffs. Now, the trial court granted summary judgment on the first element of this issue, that there was not a sufficiently outrageous conduct alleged. Now, in Colorado, this is a very high standard. The Colorado Supreme Court has said that in order to meet this burden, this threshold burden, you have to allege conduct that is so outrageous in character, and so extreme in degree, as to go beyond all possible bounds of decency and to be regarded as atrocious and utterly intolerable. Atrocious is defined as extremely wicked. What Coles did in this case is not extremely wicked. And we have to look, appellant's right, we have to look at the totality of the circumstances here and what information Coles had when they acted on it. Coles was informed by at least one customer, possibly more. They're correct that there are different versions of the events based on who was recalling it. But at least one customer came in, reported seeing a man and two children leave the store with a cart full of merchandise loaded into a black SUV and leave the premises. Upon hearing this, the loss prevention officers of Coles exited the premises, tried to verify the information they had received, and only arrived in time to see the black SUV leaving the parking lot. They went back in, continued to talk to the customers, saw their excited demeanor, heard them demand that the police be contacted, and they did so based on that information. And it's also undisputed that Mr. Bueller and his two sons did actually leave the store with a cart full of merchandise and loaded into their car. All of this information was truthful, and all Coles did was pass on truthful information to the police. It turned out that, in fact, Mr. Bueller had paid for the merchandise. The police verified that.
Didn't all the police? I said not.
According to the affidavit of Amber Pickens, the loss prevention officer who contacted the police, she reported exactly what the customers had told them. She reported that a customer had told her, told Coles representatives, that they saw a man leave the store with two children, a cart full of merchandise, and loaded into a black SUV, and provided them with the license plate number that they had been given. Now, plaintiffs relies strongly on Lee versus Colorado Times, and that case is easily distinguishable on these facts. First, Colorado Times does not stand for the proposition that an entity must do an internal investigation for reporting truthful information. And to hold otherwise would have a chilling effect on Colorado public policy, which requires, if you have a reasonable belief that a crime has been committed, that you report that crime to the police. Second, Colorado Times involved a vastly different situation. In that case, the defendant purposefully wrote an article that sought to impugn the integrity of one widow and grant kind of a noble status to the to another widow, a widow who lost her husband in a war versus a lady who lost her husband in a liquor store robbery. In addition, when Colorado Times retracted the statement that was printed in the newspaper, they admitted to not verifying the information and to and that it was not true. The information that was published was that the widow of the murdered man did not testify at the second murder trial. They admitted to falsifying that information and to getting it from an unreliable source. And lastly, Colorado Times recognizes when the distinguished Gordon V. Boyles that the dissemination of truthful information, which is all Coles did in this case, cannot amount to outrageous conduct. In Gordon V. Boyles, it involved a radio host who made slanderous and immoral comments about a well-known police officer. It turned out that some of those comments were true, and a division of this court held that the dissemination of truthful information cannot arise to outrageous conduct. And even to the extent that Coles might have, to go back to your question, Judge Webb, that Coles might have said that Mr. Buehler didn't pay for the merchandise or that the suspect didn't pay for the merchandise, even false allegations of misconduct under Colorado law cannot arise to outrageous conduct. The U.S. District Court for the District of Colorado in Carini v. Meisner reviewed several Colorado Supreme Court decision, Churchy v. Adolph Coors, and a division of this court's decision in Dorr v. C.B. Johnson, and concluded that these cases lead to the conclusion that false allegations of misconduct, even false allegations of criminal misconduct, cannot arise to outrageous conduct. And to the second element of the claim, it's Cole's position that even if reasonable persons could disagree as to whether this internal investigation is required under these circumstances, there's no evidence that Coles acted intentionally or recklessly to cause severe emotional distress in the plaintiffs. Mr. Buehler admitted in his deposition that he did not know any of the Coles employees before this incident. They did not know him, and he did not feel that they were personally out to get him. In other words, he didn't feel they were intentionally out to get him. So that would take care of the intent requirement. Recklessly in this context is defined is met if at the time the person acted, they knew or should have known that there was a substantial possibility that the conduct would cause severe emotional distress in another person. In this situation, all of this emotional distress, the majority of it at least, was allegedly caused by Mr. Buehler's security clearance. It's not reasonably foreseeable that Coles would have known that the person who they reported this information to the police held a high level of security clearance and that a limited police investigation, a Terry stop, would result in severe emotional distress to the average person. So it cannot be said that Coles acted recklessly or with the intent to cause severe emotional distress, which would provide this court with another basis for affirming the trial court's summary dismissal of this claim. And that's what we ask this court to do, to affirm the trial court's summary dismissal of the outrageous conduct claim. Now, if your honors have any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them otherwise. Thank you.
Pelley's attorney references that if there's a reasonable belief that it must be reported to the police. It's a conclusory statement to say that they had a reasonable belief here. This was a matter that was decided on summary judgment. At best, whether Coles had a reasonable belief or not to call the police in this instance or to report the customer's tip is a question of fact. You know, as I've mentioned before, there were various sort of versions here of why they even called the police. Whether those it was reasonable to call the police or not, what is a question of fact and can't be relied on here. Further, appellee's attorney says that it would have a chilling effect to essentially rule in appellant's favor to require this internal investigation. Here, it goes to the question of whether it was reasonable to call the police, internal investigation. There wasn't anything that had to be done that would have been time-consuming or would have been cost prohibitive not to do. It was a matter of doing a quick check of the cashiers or to pull the video surveillance that Kohl's had. Nobody is suggesting here, appellants aren't suggesting here that there had to be a full-out investigation within Kohl's, but there had to be some preliminary, there should have been some preliminary steps taken prior to calling the police in this matter. And I think those are the only 2 points I had wanted to address, unless the Honors have any further questions.
Appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. A written opinion will be issued in due course.